This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had a be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Hello, this is Gary Clinton, and you're listening to Night Transmissions. If you've listened to us before, you know the kind of things we do here. But in case you haven't and have just somehow stumbled in from the night, sit down in a nice big easy chair, turned your radio on, rifled through the channels, and came across this show. Well, we do old audio. Mostly old radio shows. Sometimes a little bit of poetry or the reading of a short story. But principally, we like to go for the old radio shows, the weird ones, the macabre ones. We'd like to scare you if we can. But we know that that's not too easy, and we'll settle for amusing you. And that connection, segment one, is from Lights Out on October the 10th of 1942. A little episode called Revolt of the Worms. Now, in this story, the main character, Charles, is accused several times of hiding away from the world as the world is. So what was going on in October of 1942? Well, on October the 3rd, Nazi Germany launched the A4 ballistic missile, with one eye on heaven and the other eye on London. The next day, Vice Marshal Hermann Göring claimed that the war was not the Second World War, but the War of the Races. Then, a few days later, Franklin Roosevelt said that the perpetrators of mass murder and other wartime atrocities will be judged at the conclusion of the war. This concept, of course, we are now familiar with as the Nuremberg Trial. Anyway, here's Art Obler now.
If you haven't already done so, turn off your lights now and listen to Revolt of the Worms.
All I can do is sit and think and wait. Wait for the floors to lift and the walls to crash. Facts. Think of facts. Yes, a journal of facts. Think. How it began, why it's happening. Journal of facts until the walls crash in the thick flesh. Charles Prentice. There's a fact. Chemist and fool. Fool. Run away. Run away. Run away. Run away.
Run away from reality.
War.
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 Run away.
You mean we're going to live in this godforsaken place, Charles?
Yes, Claire, I remember. You did say that. And I said, of course we're going to live here. It's ideal for my work.
But we're so far away from everything, Charles.
So far away from what? Your friends? My friends?
All right, Charles. Whatever you say, Charles.
You never disagreed with me, did you, Claire?
Why, it's so quiet up here, it's almost as if we were out of this world.
Yes, I remember. Young Jackson, you did say that.
I like working with you, sir. Why, up here, it's almost as if we were out of this world.
Out of the world. I wanted to be out of the world.
Hide. Until it's over.
Yes, why not? Why not?
What are you going all the way up there for, Prentice?
To do my work, of course.
But who cares about propagating new varieties of roses at a time like this?
The times have nothing to do with it. I'll do what I please. I'll do what I please.
But, Prentice, to leave suddenly like this, it doesn't make sense. Roses are fine in normal times, but a chemist of your ability, in times like these, certainly there's more productive work that you could do.
I'm not interested in your opinions. I'll do what I please. You hear me? Do what I please.
Do
what I please.
Yes, sir. Everything's ready, sir. Greenhouse. All ready for you, sir.
1 week ago, Wednesday.
Does the wind always blow up here, Charles?
Huh?
I said the wind. Does it always blow like that?
Why?
Frightening.
Mighty less frightening than the things that are happening back in the city.
I suppose so.
I know so. Where's that boy? Jackson.
Yes, sir.
The phosphates, are they ready yet?
Not quite, sir.
Well, get them ready. Every one of the plants. We work late tonight.
Very late.
Work late and hard. That was the answer to everything.
Chemist of your ability. In times like these, there certainly must be more important work than propagating roses that you could do. A chemist of your ability. In times like these, there certainly must be more important.
Oh, no, wouldn't think of that, I told myself. Wouldn't think of that. Roses. Yes, develop the greatest rose in the world. That would be my answer to them. While they bombed and burned, I'd develop the largest rose the world had ever known. And when the world settled down again, I'd come back and bring the rose to them, and they wouldn't care if I had run away. My plan. Why did it go wrong? Claire, why did it go wrong? Claire. Oh. Dead. You're dead. They killed you. Dead as I'll be dead. If I could only think, why did it go wrong?
Well, I put the solution that's left over, Mr. Prentice.
Yes. I do remember. That was it.
Oh, gosh, Mr. Prentice, I'm trying to understand, but I'm so tired.
You must keep working. The only salvation is to work.
What's salvation got to do with roses?
Don't be impertinent. Do your work.
Yes, sir.
2 cc for each plant, and careful. Don't let any of it touch the stem.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You weren't very happy, were you, Jackson? Those were things you couldn't understand.
It isn't that I don't want to work, Mr. Prentice. It's just that I'm all mixed up. These roses. Why do I have to pour this stuff on them every hour, on the hour? It doesn't make sense. Hormones? Sure, I know what they are. Secretions from the glands in the human body. Sure, I know what they're for. Make us grow and everything. I get it. That's what you try to do with the roses. Make them grow fast and big. But how do you know these hormones will work on plants, Mr. Prentice? And how do you know how much to give them? And how big will the roses grow, Mr. Prentice?
Questions. Everlasting questions. But now I ask them, why did it go wrong?
Thursday.
Thursday? What do I remember?
Well, I throw the hormone mixture that's left over, Mr. Prentice. Mr. Prentice, I said, well, I throw the hormone...
No way! Can't you see that I'm working?
Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. Yes. I remember.
Friday.
What a Friday.
Friday night.
Yes?
Is that you?
Yes, Charles.
What are you doing walking out here in the dark?
It's a lovely night.
Romantic at your age.
I just like the night.
You women, come back to the house.
All right.
Crazy walking around in the dark. What's the matter with you? Can't you walk? If I hadn't caught you...
It's slippery.
What are you talking about?
It's all slippery around here.
Don't talk foolishness.
But it is.
By George, you're right.
What?
Stand still. I'll light a match. I've had some... Yes. Now, we'll see what...
Charles!
Stop grabbing!
What?
Worm.
What?
Well, can't you see? Just ordinary earthworm. Night crawlers. We just walked over a few of them. Now, you women with your fears and your squeamishness. Walked on a few worms and you make more noise and more fuss.
Yes, I remember. Friday night.
The extra hormone solution, where'll I throw it, Mr. Prentice? Mr. Prentice, where'll I throw the extra hormone solution?
Saturday. And then the night.
Jackson! Jackson, where are you? Jackson, I told you to stay in the house. Jackson, where are you? Time to feed the plants. Jackson, where are you?
Not here, Charles.
Claire, you startled me walking up like that.
I didn't mean to.
That infernal boy, where is he? Have you seen him?
He's not in the house.
But I told him not to go out. I told him only an hour ago he's got to work all night. The plants must be watered every hour on the hour.
He went out.
Well, why didn't you stop him? Oh, I have to go chase after him. Jackson! Jackson, are you out there? Come in.
What
did you think it was? Thunder. It's starting to rain. Shut the door. Shut the door, I say.
But the boy...
If he hasn't the sense to come in out of the rain, it's just too bad. I've got enough to do with worrying about my roses without worrying about him. And don't you go out after him. He'll come back. He'll come back.
Saturday night. And when it was day again...
Charles, wake up. Please wake up.
Oh, where?
You're on the couch. You fell asleep on the couch. Charles, get up right away.
Well, what's the matter with you? Why should I get up? What difference does it make?
Listen to me, please. The boy, he isn't back yet.
Huh?
Jackson, he isn't back yet. Charles, where can he be? The storm, you slept. I waited.
Wait a minute. Have you looked in his room?
I just came from there. Charles, where could he have gone to? All through the storm.
Oh, stop talking so much and let me get up. Let's go see. Oh. Must you follow me? Why didn't you wake me up? Why did you let me sleep?
I must have fallen asleep, too. I opened my eyes. It was day. Oh, Charles.
Oh, stop old Charlesing me. Crazy young fool, so he spent the night outside. So what's the difference? Teach him a lesson. Well, no wonder he isn't back yet. Fog like this, it's as bad as night.
Charles,
All right. What am I supposed to do? Go wandering through fog like a bloodhound, like a fool? Don't worry, he'll be back. He'll be back.
But you never did come back, did you, Jackson? When the sun came out and that everlasting wind came up and lifted the fog.
Charles, come here.
Where are you?
Back of the house, Charles. Come quick.
Oh, what is it? What do you want now? The boy isn't around. I've looked everywhere. Now,
what happened back here?
What?
Look at the ground.
Who plowed this ground up?
Plowed?
Yes, certainly plowed. Can't you see? Some crazy, drunken fool plowed up the ground.
But during the night? Charles, how could that be?
You believe what you see, don't you? It's that boy.
What?
Yes, that Jackson went crazy, found the plow, tore up the ground, and ran away. Went out of his mind, that's it. The boy's gone crazy, tearing up the ground. Gone crazy.
And then, that night, that same night after I thought Jackson had gone crazy, run away, I went back to my work, Sunday night.
Charles, can I speak to you? Charles, please stop your work and talk to me.
Haven't you lived with me enough years to know I don't like to be interrupted when I'm working?
But I'm frightened.
Are you? Really?
Charles, stop it.
Are you out of your mind?
Yes, maybe I am.
What did you say?
Maybe I am crazy. All right, maybe I am. That's the only way I could have lived with you all these years.
What?
Endured your selfishness, your unbelievable selfishness.
Well...
Everything's for you for 20 years, everything for you.
Now, that's enough.
Your work, your pleasures, what you think, what you want, everything for you, nothing for anyone else.
Will you
shut up? The gentle little Mr. Prentice, the scientist, the good husband who never lifts his voice. Mother in heaven, I'd rather be married to a fool with a heart in him than you.
Well, then...
You haven't got a heart. You never had a heart. It's you, and no one else, and that boy can be dead out there and you don't care, and I can be dead and you don't care as long as you're safe and doing what you want to do.
Will you go away and let me go on with my work?
Charles, I'm fighting that boy. Now there are noises.
I'm asking you for the last time to go away and let me do my work.
But listen to me. You've been out here all night. I've been in the back of the house alone, and I've been listening, and I didn't want to come in here, but I had to. Charles, things I said, I meant them. For years, I've meant them. All right, that doesn't matter. But I tell you this, there's something outside the house. Find out what it is, Charles.
20 years ago, I thought you were an irrational woman. I thought I'd trained you out of that irrationality. I was wrong. I'll humor you just this once, but never again. Where are these noises?
At the back of the house.
The lantern, hand it to me.
Yes.
Thank you. You're frightened. You don't have to go with me.
I want to know...
What? That you're a fool? Well? So what am I supposed to hear? There's nothing. Hello out there! Hello!
Well, what now?
Listen.
To what?
Listen.
To what?
I thought...
You heard the wind whistling through the cracks in your brain. Come into the house.
Charles, wait.
Wait for...
Here?
Yeah. So what? Give me the lantern. If it's that boy... Oh,
it could be him, couldn't
that
it?
That crazy young fool playing practical jokes. If I get around the corner of the house and... What's going on here?
Charles, something moving under the ground.
Yeah. So dark. Can't quite make out.
Charles, what is it?
I don't know. I don't know. Animal of some sort?
Take me back to the house.
Oh, go yourself. Moon will come out of the clouds. See what this is.
Give me the lantern, Charles.
No, I want to see. The house is back there. Turn around and go back to it. Go ahead.
All right. All right.
Yes. It is something burrowing. Infernal moon come out, I'd see there. Coming out. Now I'll see what... Holes. Holes in the ground all over. What are they? Who? Bomb crater? But that isn't possible. No. Animal burrows. But what animal could make a hole 4 feet across? What animal...
Where? Where are you? Claire!
So dark, I can't see you! Claire! Where are you? Claire! Claire! Where are you? Claire!
Yes, Claire.
Claire!
I ran through the night looking for you. The echo of my voice is still in my ears. Looking for you, and the moon was under the clouds, and I couldn't see, and I couldn't find you. And then I did. You had fallen into one of those craters. To one of those holes in the ground. I couldn't see you, but I could hear you. But which one of the holes? They were all over, ground pockmarked with them. I ran around in the dark. I could hear you, but couldn't find you. And then the moon, it was out again. Oh, blast the moon. Why did it come out? If it hadn't come out, I wouldn't have seen. And my head... Stop it, stop it, stop it, Claire, stop it. I can still hear you. I can still see you, your body down in that hole. As I ran toward you, suddenly I saw that something else was coming toward you. Something that glistened, wet in the moonlight. Something long and slimy. A great twisting snake. Yet not a snake. Not a snake. And the fear in me made me fall to the ground, and I saw as I lay there, I saw... The thing moved toward the hole in the ground as if you weren't there. As if it were blind and couldn't see. Like a great blind worm. It was a worm. A worm 10, 20, no, 30 feet long, crawling in fright to its home in the ground. And it moved toward you, Claire. Covered you. Crushed you.
You're dead, Claire. You've been dead for 2 days. Why should I tear out of my memory all the horror of how you died? Of how young Jackson must have died.
Where will I throw the extra hormone solution, Mr. Prentice? Where will I throw the extra hormone solution, Mr. Prentice?
Yes. It's very funny, isn't it, Jackson? I ran away and I was going to bring back to the world the greatest rose. But I brought back the greatest worms. The hormones you threw away soaked into the ground and into them. Hundreds of little worms burrowing under the ground, soaking into their flesh, into their life process, miraculously increasing the growth of them. Until overnight they grew and grew without limit into those terrible horrors.
And they are still growing. I can hear them. For the last 2 days, squirming around the house and over it, great monstrous pieces of slimy flesh, squirming and writhing. Hundreds of them, thousands of them, burrowing under the ground and at night coming out of the ground. I have seen them, a sea of flesh, a sea of worms. Yes, I hear you out there, you worms. You were under the ground, and now there's no room underground for you, so you come out of the ground. The world was yours first, so now you're going to take it back again. The world for the worms. You're under the house. You're lifting it. The walls will fall and crush me, and I'll be dead, and I want to be dead. Yes, now I know why this is happening to me. I thought I could run away from the world and what is happening in the world. You hear that, you worms out there? I thought I could run away. Oh, I'm very tired. Just sit here and wait. Wait for them. I know how I'll die. The walls falling, crushing. Window. Something behind me. A worm at the window. Head looking in. He's crawling in. And another following. And another. They're filling the room. Worms all around. The worms. The worms around me. Worms covering me. Cold flesh. Wet head. The worms. The worms.
So we can see that even in the fantasy programming of the time were reflected the concerns of the time. There were monsters out there, monsters created by our pride and fed by our carelessness. It's still true, you know. Or maybe I'm just crazy, crazy, crazy. And Arch Obler, well, he just wrote stories. Segment 2 is from the CBS Mystery Theater, which aired back in 1974, January the 27th of 1974 to be exact, and it's called Dead Ringer. As you can imagine, someone gets very dead very soon after the introduction music fades out.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the fear you can hear. Welcome to the sounds of suspense. Have you ever noticed a similarity between night driving and making your way through life? Driving at night, you can only see as far as your headlights show you the road. You never know what's over the next hill or around the next curve. And even on a straight road, your vision only extends as far as your lights. Life is very much the same. None of us really knows what lies ahead.
You look exactly like my husband, a dead ringer. Here, take a look at this picture.
Hey, that's scary. I didn't know two guys could look this much alike.
How would you like to be my husband?
No way. I like being who I am, Al Grissom.
But don't you see how easy it would be to take his place?
Yeah, you bet. But it's easier to stay away from murder.
Well, who said anything about murder?
You did, my lovely. And my answer is no way.
Our mystery drama, Dead Ringer, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Murray Burnett and stars Leon Janney. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. I'll be back shortly. You're on a blacktop country road about 18 miles east of the little town of Eudalia. It's raining hard. You're driving a Citroën Maserati, and it handles. But you have your problems. You're going to be late for dinner, and you have a husband who doesn't appreciate lateness. The night seems to be getting blacker, and the rain shows no sign of easing.
Darn this rain. While I'm at it, darn the weatherman who promised clear and cool weather.
Your name is Gloria Winters. And then the headlights pick up something in the road. Whatever it is, it's a problem because it doesn't seem to move.
Come on, stupid, move. Get out of my way. Oh, my. It's a man. What happened?
A car hit me. Drove off. Thanks for stopping.
That's okay.
Well, a lot of people didn't.
You think you can make it to my car?
Yeah, with a little help.
Okay. There we go. Oh. That's it. Oh. Steady now.
Yeah, I guess I better...
Just slip into the seat.
Yeah.
There you go. I'll close the door and come around the other side.
Watch yourself. There's some crazy guys driving this road. You're soaked.
And you are hurt. I'll take you to the Hermitage.
What's that?
The hospital.
Oh, no. No hospital.
You're bleeding.
Now, look, looks worse than it is. I sure playing hell with your card, huh?
Well, you must go to a hospital.
Oh, no, no way.
But why?
Because hospitals are for dying.
Oh, that's crazy. Well,
that's what everyone tells me.
Well, I don't care what
look, I can't ever thank you enough for picking me up, but I have this thing about hospitals.
But you're
really... I promise you, I'm not going to die.
Okay, but where to?
The Three Coyotes Motel. It's just outside.
I know where it is.
Oh,
no, come on. Just put your head on the pillow and don't be a baby.
You're some dynamite kind of good Samaritan.
Well, I have a right to see what you look like under all that dirt and blood, haven't I?
No argument.
This may hurt.
Oh.
There. Well, now you're beginning to look like you have it perfectly.
It's that bad, huh?
Oh, no. It's nothing. I just thought of something.
Like what?
You look exactly like my husband. But I mean exactly. You could be identical twins. You don't believe me?
No, I believe you.
Well, that's why I got such a shock when I cleaned you up and got a good look at your face in the light. You're a dead ringer for Leo.
Oh. Why does that shake you up?
Well, Leo and I are having our problems.
Isn't everybody?
I suppose. I'm just wondering...
Yeah?
Well, I'm wondering what you were doing walking down Route 38 in the rain at 6:15.
I missed the bus.
There is no bus on Route 38.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did.
Okay, I suppose you've got a right to know the story. I live in Chicago. I'm a market analyst.
Come again?
I advise my customers about what to do or what not to do in the stock market. Sort of a securities specialist.
Are you, married?
Oh, no. But that's part of the story. Years ago, I fell in love. She was from Chicago, too, but it didn't work out. You've heard the story 100 million times. You met someone. We said a sentimental goodbye. She cried. I felt sick. And we made the usual commitments. If she ever needs me, you know.
Romantic.
Mm-hmm. Romantic. Well, the day before yesterday, I got a call from her. She was living near Eudalia. She was in trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Well, it was private. And there'll be no names.
Okay.
So I came. Naturally, she didn't want her husband to know. She didn't want my car to be seen by the neighbors. Well, you know how small towns are.
Yes, I know.
So I let her call the shots. She picked me up, drove me somewhere close to her house. She was supposed to drive me back, but her husband had called and said he was coming home early.
Well, where was he supposed to be?
It was on a business call. It would have kept him from getting home before 9. So our appointment was cut short. She panicked, and I walked, trying to thumb a ride. This widow came along and... pow. And you found me.
What a difference. What a difference. You look like Leo, but you were completely different. Leo wouldn't cross the street to help a blind, crippled kid find his crutch. While you...
And you stopped and picked up a stranger lying in the road.
Well, I told you that Leo and I don't get along.
But you married him.
I didn't know what it would be like. Anyway, what are you going to do now?
Oh, I'm going to change motels and lie low until I can go back to Chicago without having to explain the way I look.
What about the girl you came to help?
Oh, that was a bad scene. No, nothing I can really do for her. She has a decision to make.
So have I. Will you help me to make it?
If I can.
Oh, you can, Al. You can. In a very big way.
I don't like it, Gloria. I don't like it at all.
You have been saying that for a whole week, Leo.
When's he going back to Chicago?
When the scars heal and nobody will ask questions.
How about the name of the girl he came to help?
He won't tell me.
I don't like it.
Oh, Leo, trust me.
Why?
Because I'm a woman.
If you could give me one good reason...
I've given you a million reasons. $1 million. Al is the man who can do it for us.
You really believe he's leveling about the securities market in his background? Maybe he's conning you.
Why?
Take a look in the mirror.
All right. Suppose he is playing me for a sucker.
Then we're...
We're still all right, maybe even better. Just trust me.
Do I have a choice?
You always have a choice. Don't ever forget that. You made one the day you married me. I do love you, Al.
Me too.
No, we have some serious
things. Come here.
Come on, I'll be serious.
We can't go on like this.
What?
Isn't that what you were going to be so serious about? Tell me that we can't go on like this.
Well, yes. How did you know?
Oh, because people are more predictable than the stock market. And, darling, I've studied the market and I know its moves.
Okay. Then continue.
With what?
What else I had to say?
Oh, it was going to go something like this. I told you I was fed up with Leo, and until you came along, I just didn't see any way out, but now...
You're doing super. Go on.
But now, if we love each other, I can divorce Leo, and we'll get married and live happily ever after. Right?
Not exactly.
Where'd I go wrong?
On the divorce.
You don't want to divorce Leo?
I know Leo. He'd never give me a divorce.
Does that matter?
A woman wants a little security.
Hey, with your looks, you don't have to worry about that.
Looks don't last forever.
Well, nothing does.
Some things do.
Okay, name one.
Death?
You know, I never met anyone like you.
Not even that girl you came out here to help?
Not even her.
And you have no parents, no relatives. Nobody except yourself.
Just me and my shadow.
We've talked a lot about Leo. You've never seen him.
And I don't want to.
I'd like you to look at this picture of him.
That's scary. I didn't know two guys could look this much alike.
I told you.
Yeah, but...
You thought I was laying it on for your benefit.
I guess.
And now?
I believe you couldn't tell us apart.
I guess this was in the back of my mind ever since I first saw your face.
What was?
How would you like to be Mr. Leo Winters?
Oh, no way. I'd like being Al Grissom.
Don't you see how easy it would be to take his place?
Well, fine, fine, but what happens to him?
Well, that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the problem.
I thought maybe you could think of a way out.
Yeah, I can, but I don't like it.
Try it on me.
No, I think you've already tried it on, and you like it.
Maybe.
Not maybe, positively. That's what you wanted to lay on me when you said you wanted to talk.
You're not only sexy, but you're smart.
Yeah, you bet. Smart enough to stay away from murder.
Well, who said anything about murder?
I did, my lovely, I did. I said murder. And I also said no way.
But that's stupid. You don't even know Leo.
You're really serious about trying to get rid of him.
Oh, think of what it would be like. Mr. and Mrs. Leo Winters, you and me, happily married for the rest of our lives.
Now, you've jumped about three tracks in a couple of miles. You're too far down the road.
Why?
How did you get Leo to let you come and see me? Did you tell him we were playing backgammon or chess?
Well, you know how greedy he is. He thinks that you're going to make him a lot of money with your connections in the Chicago markets.
But we've still got a little problem to solve about his departure.
Ah, then you're interested.
Lady, if I hadn't been interested, either you or I would have been long gone from this room. You must have been thinking about this for some time.
I have.
And you must have come up with some ideas.
I have.
Well, I'd like to hear them before I commit myself.
You will. But I promised Leo I'd be back at 3:30 sharp. It doesn't give us enough time to discuss it now.
No, but it does give us enough time to...
Seal the bargain?
Once you agree to discuss the idea of murdering someone, you've taken the first step along a road that is full of hairpin turns, some of which don't even have warning signs. We'll be back shortly with Act Two. It's me again, and we're talking about murder. That is, we're not talking about it, but Gloria Winters and Al Grissom are trying to arrange a murder. It isn't a simple task, as you will hear.
No. No, hiring a killer is just setting yourself up for big trouble.
But do you have any better ideas?
No, not yet.
You'd better come up with one, because Leo's getting suspicious.
Oh.
You don't have a gun.
No, we've been through that.
Well, you could buy one.
And it can be traced.
Not if we get rid of it afterwards.
Gloria, I know the way the police operate. When a husband gets knocked off, the first one they check out is his wife. And statistics show they have a better than even chance of being right.
But I'm going to say it was a prowler.
Now, what makes you think they'll believe you?
Hey.
Hmm?
I've got it. Why didn't I think of this before? The same thing that happened to you before, only this time, it'll be fatal.
Hit and run?
Of course.
You know, the more we talk, the more I'm beginning to think we ought to forget about the whole thing.
No.
All right. What car are we going to use?
Well, we'll rent one under a false name.
Mm-hmm. And who's going to rent it?
Well...
Now, you see, the guy who rents either one of us a car will remember us. And even if we give a false name...
But why should they be worried if they get the car back?
Because the hit and run will be discovered. They'll start asking questions.
Well, I'll be home with a friend as a witness.
No, no, no. Hit and run is a crime. I'll go looking for the driver of the car, and that has to be me. No, I don't like anything we've come up with. And we've got to stop thinking about murder. The cops are going to be looking for somebody and continue to think of more than an accident.
Hit and run
isn't natural. Nobody's going to dig much into what looks like a natural death. If we could get a doctor to sign a death certificate, we'd have it made.
I know a doctor.
Oh? Well, he can't be in on it. He's got to think it's death from some kind of natural cause.
I said I know a doctor.
Who?
His name is Carmody, Hugh Carmody. He's about 85 years old. He's our family doctor. He was my mother's doctor when I was born.
Is he still practicing?
Well, not really. But he refuses to give up the families he's treated for years. So he still looks after me and Leo, sort of inherited him when we got married.
Mm-hmm.
No idea?
Just a glimmer. Would this doctor believe you?
Oh, of course. Come on, let me in on it.
Okay. What do you know about poisons?
Practically nothing.
Yeah, well, that makes us even. Now, what we need is some kind of poison that looks like he died of a stroke or a heart attack or maybe some kind of food poisoning.
Mushrooms.
What?
Toadstools, mushrooms. They're poisonous.
No, but he's not going to eat them.
He will if I cook them.
You know, that might... No. He'll get suspicious if you give them to him and you don't eat them.
Well, we need to know more about poison mushrooms. The library. I'll go there.
Do you mind? You go asking for a book about mushrooms and then call in this doctor to look at Leo who's just eaten some bad mushrooms.
All right. I understand. But I still got to... I'll see you later.
Where are you going?
To find out what I want. And nobody will ever know. Al?
Mm.
It's me.
Where have you been?
To see Dr. Carmody.
Of all the dumb plays.
Relax, darling, and give me a kiss. I think I really have something.
What did you do?
toadstool. A fleshy fungus that is poisonous or inedible as distinguished from an edible mushroom.
Oh, great. We knew that before you left.
But we didn't know that aconite, which was formerly much used as a cardiac and respiratory sedative, is the poison that comes from toadstool, or monk's hood, and can be deadly.
You didn't ask?
Of course not. I know that Dr. Carmody always visits his few patients between 3 and 4, so I went to his office, told the nurse I wasn't feeling well.
Yeah.
She knows me and let me in to wait in his office. And he has a lot of books, so I read.
Yeah, and what did you tell Carmody when he came back?
Oh, he's such an old love. I made up a story about being tired and not feeling well, and he gave me a tonic, which I'm going to get.
You know, maybe we're getting somewhere.
Oh, we're there, darling. We are there.
All right, slow up. Now, first... Where can we get the aconite? Aconite. Yeah, that's it.
Suppose I told you we don't have to get it.
Well, I'd like to hear why.
Okay. My dad had a bad heart.
Oh, how long ago was that?
About 7 years.
And you're telling me that this Dr. Carmody prescribed aconite?
Right.
Well, how do you know the stuff's still good?
I don't.
Well, it doesn't seem to be.
Well, this is the only way we can handle it. If it doesn't work, we won't get into any trouble. And if it does... We won't get into any trouble either. So what have we got to lose?
You know, when you put it that way...
Do you know any other way?
No.
Then let's try it.
Okay, let's work it out.
Okay. Day after tomorrow, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
That's Eileen's night out.
Right.
I'll buy the mushrooms tomorrow. Then I'll cook a great steak dinner with all the trimmings. And Leo and I will eat it.
And you too?
Of course, I'll have to.
Mm-hmm.
I won't eat too much, though. But enough to make me a little sick.
Yeah.
Then when Leo begins to feel sick, I'll suggest we call a doctor.
Carmody.
Of course, Carmody. He'll come and ask about what we ate, and I'll say steak and mushrooms, and he'll say, mushrooms? And right away, diagnose mushroom poisoning. And give us something.
Yeah, I'm with you so far. And then?
And then after he leaves, I'll tuck dear old Leo into bed, tell him I have to go to the drugstore to get something. I'll go down and let... You in.
Wait a minute. What do you need me for?
We're in this together, my love. And I want you there.
Yeah, I damn well better disappear after Leo dies.
That will be just fine. And we'll set up a very, very romantic meeting place.
That's real good coffee, Gloria.
Thank you, darling.
You really shouldn't have made that pie. I gotta watch my figure.
I know how much you love it. Do you want to go into the den?
Oh, not particularly.
Look.
What?
You feel all right.
I feel fine.
Are you sure those mushrooms were good?
Of course.
I don't know. I feel kind of funny.
Even if they weren't, it's too soon for them to act up.
How do you know?
Oh, I've known about mushrooms since I was a kid.
Well, all the same, I've got pains in my stomach. Call Dr. Carmody. Do you really think it's the mushrooms, Doctor?
I know it's the mushrooms. It has to be. Both of you ate them, and you tell me, Leo, that you ate more than Gloria.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I get for being a pig.
Well, you're going to be all right. Just stay in bed, and Gloria, you get this prescription filled.
What about the pain?
I'm giving you a sedative also. Well, I can't understand is how you cooked those mushrooms in the first place, Gloria. Your mother told you about those things when you were a child.
Well, I know, and I feel just awful. I can't explain how it happened, but I'm sorry. I have no excuse.
Yeah, no use crying over spilt milk. Yeah, I'd better get home to bed. You get that prescription filled, young lady.
Oh, I will. Let me take you to your car.
Hello?
Are you ready to come over and sit with a sick friend?
It worked.
Like a charm.
How was Dr. Carmody?
Just as we planned. He diagnosed mushroom poisoning. Bawled me out gently. But we're lucky. That visit to his office paid off.
How will I get into your house?
Well, you know where the house is.
Yeah, I do.
Park 3 blocks away on Green Tree Lane.
Mm-hmm.
You know that little place I told you about off the road?
Yeah, I remember.
But don't walk the streets. Just cut across the fields. Mm-hmm. Head straight north. Better take a flashlight. Ours will be the first house you come to. The back door will be open.
Okay, I'm on my way.
Make it fast as you can. I think Leo heard me come back. He'll be yelling for his medicine.
Gloria?
Come in and shut the door.
Okay.
Did you lock it?
No, that's a good idea.
Here, let me. I'm waiting for the kettle to boil.
Why?
Well, you don't think I can give him this stuff straight, do you?
Well, why not? He's expecting medicine, isn't he?
Oh, he won't taste it in his tea. He likes it sweet. And I am going to make it very sweet there. Hand me the cup.
Yeah. You know, I could do with a cup of tea myself.
How about something stronger?
Oh, you got something?
Oh, we're completely equipped.
Oh, don't forget to wash out the glass and put it away.
Don't worry.
All right. Hey, that's plenty. Have to be able to walk straight.
Drink as much as you want. I'll finish what you leave.
Gloria!
Yes, dear?
What happened to the medicine?
I'd better get upstairs. I'll be right back. Save me a drink?
Yeah, how long will it take?
Oh, don't ask me, Al, darling. It's the first time for me, too.
That's liquor. Tastes funny. You know, I'm imagining things. I better finish before she gets back. Hey, I feel funny. I better sit down.
Al, what happened?
I'm sorry. I made so much noise. I don't feel too good.
Don't worry about the noise, Al. It's all right with me.
What?
Well, I guess the aconite wasn't too old, Al.
Stupid. This was a setup all the way.
All the way. I must admit, you did make it tough.
Not as tough as you made it for me. You know, you're a hell of a
dame. You're right, Al.
No, not dame. I was going to say a hell of a liar.
It wasn't all lies, Al. I'm expensive. And there is a $1 million life insurance policy.
Oh,
And when I saw your face, I realized that this was just too good an opportunity to miss.
You know, there's a little something I... Help me get him upstairs and into my bed.
Yes, dear.
It's no time to get hysterical.
No, I'm not. It's just funny to me that Al's going to wind up just where he wanted. In your bed.
A murder has been accomplished. The happy couple, Leo and Gloria Winters, still have a way to go before they achieve their goal. But murder sometimes makes for strange and uneasy bedfellows. We'll return shortly with Act Three. The Scottish poet Robert Burns' oft-quoted line, "The best-laid schemes of mice and men of Ganga Glee," doesn't seem to apply here. Leo and Gloria Winters have successfully killed Al Grissom, a man who looked enough like Leo Winters to have been his twin. They've carried him up to Leo's bed, and now at 4 o'clock in the morning, a frantic Gloria has summoned her sleepy and bewildered family doctor, for whom she plays the distraught and bereaved wife.
I don't understand.
Oh, neither do I, Doctor. I gave him the medicine you prescribed, and he seemed to feel better. And he dropped off to sleep, and he...
I think you'd do well to take that sedative yourself.
It's all my fault if I hadn't given
him... No, it's no one's fault, Gloria. If there's any blame against him, it's mine. But certainly his symptoms earlier didn't seem to warrant more action than I took.
Oh, Leo's gone. I killed him. Oh, God.
Gloria?
I'm sorry, Doctor.
It's all right. It's perfectly understandable, this situation. Now, I want you to take this sedative and go downstairs and lie down. I'll attend to everything.
All right, I will. And thank you. Thank you.
Oh, Gloria. Have I ever told you how clever you are?
Not more than a million times in the last week.
That's an exaggeration.
So?
So I love you.
You should. Without me, would we be here on the Riviera in France, living the way we've always wanted, with $1 million, and the whole world waiting to see that we enjoy ourselves?
Do you think we can ever go back to the States?
Well, I don't want to. Do you, Leo?
What's the Leo?
I'm sorry. I've been pretty good though lately, haven't I, Al?
You've been great. You must have really been good with old Doc Carmody, too.
Oh, he was so upset and so confused. I threw the most beautiful fit of hysterics you ever saw.
Wish I could have seen it.
Oh, so broken up. So he insisted on handling everything, even the insurance people. He never gave him a chance to question anything. He signed the death certificate and had the body out of the house and into the crematorium before they ever got there.
What about returning to the U.S.?
Oh, I don't think we should for a while. Maybe in a couple of years. But never to Udalia. Maybe San Francisco. New York.
Well, we'll see. How about a dip?
Al! Huh? Al Grissom. A pleasure to see you again, Al. How you doing? Now, that's a silly question. I can see you're doing great. No one stays at a class hotel like this unless he's doing great. But I always said you had class, Al. Yes, and style. Oh, you want to introduce me to the girl who's hanging on to you?
I'm afraid you've got the wrong man.
Don't you mean you're afraid I got the right one, Al?
Look, I don't know you. I've never seen you before in my life.
Now, you're not being smart, Al, and you were always very smart. That is, until 3 months ago, when you made your first mistake.
Hey, come on, darling, let's get away from this.
You forget it. You're finished with that getting away stuff.
Well, how can I prove to you that you've made a mistake?
My name isn't Al Grissom.
Al. I'm...
You're registered under a false name? Come on, Al. I'd recognize you anywhere. But I still can't figure why you didn't try some kind of face job. But like I said, you haven't played this very smart from the beginning.
Look, mister...
Oh, the name is Grafton. Lou Grafton. And I'll meet you at the Promenade Cafe in an hour. 1 hour, Al. And you be there.
Who is this guy?
Don't ask me.
Well, who should I ask?
Maybe Al.
Very funny. Didn't Al ever mention this Lou Grafton? Must have said something.
Nothing.
Well, I don't believe you.
But why would I lie?
I don't know. But you certainly were cozy enough with Al.
I found out what I had to. What we had talked about. He had no family, no relatives, nothing, nobody to trace.
I'd better meet this guy and find out what he's talking about.
I'll go with you.
I don't think that's smart.
We're in it together, Al. Who knows? I may even be able to help.
Glad you could make it, Al. Sit down.
This is Gloria.
Nice meeting you again, Gloria. Tell her you'll meet her in a little while, Al.
She's in on this.
On the whole deal?
Yes.
Sure. You certainly changed, Al. You never put a dame on the spot before.
On the spot? Oh, well, look. All I meant is that she's with me. You've made a mistake, and I don't even know what you're talking about.
Darling, why don't we listen to what he has to say?
Smart. Al, this is the only time I'm going to go soft. The only time. Well, because we've known each other so long, and... Well, because we didn't pull it off the first time. Now, I've talked to John. I got him to agree that if you give us the whole take, we'll forget about what happened.
The whole take?
The whole 2 million, Al. All of it. Well?
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
What's there to think about? What's your alternative? You gonna try to run again? You know we'll get you. You've seen it happen 100 times to other guys who tried to cross us. Now, you just tell us where and when we can pick up the cash. And just thank God that I could make the deal for you.
It isn't all that easy.
What's your problem?
It's no use. You wouldn't believe it.
If you got a problem, you know we can help, but don't give me any fairy tales.
Any time.
For what?
To think.
There's nothing to think about.
Well, from what you say.
How much time?
Another day.
Oh, no deal.
Look, if you want to do business with me, you'll just have
tonight,
to...
Tonight. You'll be in your room at 10. There's plenty of time to think. And while you're at it, think about doing it our way. Or this time, you'll really end up very dead.
$2 million.
That's a lot of dollars.
Well, you're a big help.
Well, I might be if you'd stop repeating the figures over and over again.
There's no way we can get $2 million. I've got to prove to them that I'm not Al Grissom. Then they'll leave us alone.
And how do you do that?
Of course. Fingerprints. I'll have absolute proof. Even those guys will leave fingerprints.
And who's going to tell them? You?
No. I've got to arrange somehow for the police to send my prints to Washington or somewhere.
And the police will get word back that these aren't the fingerprints of Al Grissom, but really the prints of a man named Leo Winters, who supposedly died 1 month ago, and whose widow collected $1 million in life insurance.
You're right. That's the only way to go. How do we convince him I'm not Grissom?
I don't know. We went to a lot of trouble to prove to the world that you were.
Who was this Grissom? He must have been awfully big to get into a deal like this.
I think he must be calling you.
Me?
Who else?
Well, I don't want to answer.
Well, that's not smart. They know we're here.
Now, don't start talking like Grafton. Hello?
Al, it's me.
What do you want?
Al, I was wondering whether you'd made up your mind.
Not yet.
It's 9 o'clock.
You said 10.
I did, but John's not happy.
What do I care about John?
You should, Al. After all, he's got a real legitimate beef. You worked for him for years. You were always clean. You took the hot stocks and you cashed them. You made money and so did we, but... I guess the 2 million got to it.
Look, I've got some more thinking to do, and I'll see you at 10.
Well?
I know who and what Grissom was. He took hot stocks and bonds and cashed them, and then turned the cash over to...
The boys?
I suppose you could call him that.
Does that help any?
A little, maybe.
How?
At least we know what they're after. If there was some way we could trap them, some way to fool them.
Well, suppose there were, then what?
I don't know yet. Play along with me when Grafton comes up at 10. Yes?
Grafton.
You finished thinking?
All finished.
And?
I'll go along with you.
Now, why couldn't you have told me that this morning? You had to get John's blood pressure up.
Forget John. I told you I had problems.
And I told you it would help.
I don't have the $2 million with me.
We never figured you did. Where is it, Chicago?
I'll pick it up.
When?
As soon as I can.
Will you stop playing games? When?
It's back in the States.
Okay. Now, you'll get the next plane.
Not so fast. It's somewhere in Udalia, and I can't go back there.
Why not?
A little something. The cops might want to talk to me.
About what?
About a girl I visited there, and an old friend.
What's wrong with visiting an old friend?
Nothing. If you don't get caught by her husband and get into a fight, beat him up, and he calls the cops.
That's not much of a rap.
That's right. But you'd want to see me in jail.
Yeah, you got a point. We'll pick up the dough.
No way.
Why not? We're going to get it anyway.
You're going to get it. But I want some assurance that I'm going to be okay.
You have my word.
I'd like a little more than that.
Like what?
That's what I've been trying to figure out. Some way I'll be sure that...
Look, if you haven't figured it out by now, you're not going to. Well, I get the plane tickets.
You sure don't give me much time.
We gave you time before, Al. Too much time.
Will you stop pacing up and down like an animal?
Gloria, I think I may have an idea.
I hope.
On the plane, I'll tell them I figured it out. Since I can't go back to Udalia, I'll insist that I want someone representing me when they pick up the money.
But there is no money.
They don't know that. I'll insist that you go along.
Hold it.
You'll be all right.
What happens when they find out there isn't any money and I'm there and you're not?
They'd put in a call to Carmody. Tell him you can't get over what's happened, that you need help, and that you've gotten into some kind of trouble. He should have the police there. Then you take them to the doctor's house. And with the cops there, you'll be in the clear.
And you?
I'll be gone. I'd rather be alive and running than the other way.
I don't like it.
Then think of something better, because that's the way I'm going to play it.
Now, Al, I know you won't get any crazy ideas at this stage of the game, but just in case you do, these two young fellas here are in our party, and they'll be on the plane with us all the way to Chicago.
Thanks.
Flight 396 to New York, now loading at gate 3. Flight 396,
yeah,
now loading at gate 3.
Excuse me. One moment, please.
What do you want?
Lieutenant Fourneau, Interpol. I believe you are Mr. Leo Winter.
I'm afraid you're mistaken. I've known this man for years. His name is Al...
Mr. Winters.
You heard him. You've got the wrong man.
Please, don't make a fuss, Mr. Winters. I'm instructed to hold you for the murder of an Alvin Grissom in Udalia.
Oh, hold me. What about her? She's my wife, and she was in on this from the beginning. The whole thing...
We know
was...
all about Mrs. Winters. In fact, she was the one who informed us about the murder in return for some small promises.
She told? She...
You asked me, remember? You said, think of something better. And I did.
Come along, Mr. Winters. Gentlemen, you'll excuse us.
I'm coming, Lieutenant. I'm coming without any trouble. You see, Grafton, you didn't believe me. If you'd only have believed me, maybe we could have worked out a deal after all.
The Winters had a good plan, and it all would have worked, except for one thing they couldn't have foreseen. the bend in the road ahead, and what lay around it. I'll return shortly. If Gloria and Leo Winters could have known what lay ahead of them, they would never have gone through with their plan. That is, if they could have seen into the future and around the bend. Yet actually being able to see into the future, to know what's going to happen next week, next month, next year, is a gift that most of us wouldn't want. Because who knows what terrors may lie ahead. Our cast included Leon Janney, Joan Lovejoy, Larry Haynes, Paul Hecht, and Robert Dryden. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Pleasant dreams.
Tonight's a little unusual in having only three segments, but this last segment is, I think, a bit of a treat. It comes from Australia, a program called the Caltex Theatre. It's a 1957 adaptation of one of the really pretty good science fiction movies out of the 50s, the 1956 MGM movie Forbidden Planet.
Welcome to the Caltex Theatre, a full hour of dramatic entertainment broadcast over a nationwide network of stations throughout Australia. The Caltex Theatre is brought to you by Caltex Oil, marketers of over 1,000 outstanding petroleum products, in association with Caltex dealers and distributors everywhere. Tonight in the Caltex Theatre, you will hear a special adaptation of the unusual Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer motion picture, Forbidden Planet, a fascinating science fiction story set in a world of tomorrow. Starring in Forbidden Planet, you will hear Lionel Stevens, your producer, Cressick Jenkinson. The Caltex Theatre presents Forbidden Planet, Act One. In the final decade of the 21st century, men and women in rocket ships landed on the moon. By 2200 AD, they had reached the other planets in our solar system. Almost at once, there followed discovery of hyperdrive, through which the speed of light was attained and later greatly surpassed. So at last, mankind began the conquest and colonization of deep space. United Planets cruiser C-57D was more than a year out from Earth base on a special mission to the planetary system of the great main sequence star, Altair.
When are we going to do C-fix, Jerry?
30 seconds, Skipper. Ship on course, sir. We'll reach DC point at 1701. That's less than 3 minutes now.
Chief, we'll drop back below light speed in about 3 minutes. Got your breakable gear stored?
Aye, aye, sir.
DC set and punched on, Skipper.
All right, attention. Captain to crew. All hands squared away to decelerate. DC stations. 3.3896 of light speed.
Skipper, there's Altair coming up on the screen, right on the nose.
Okay, Jerry, punch out an orbit on the fourth planet.
Aye, aye, Skipper. Ship in approach, Skipper. Helical vector orientated.
Attention, captain to crew, attention. Our destination, Altair 4, is now visible on the main viewplate. As you recollect from your briefing lectures, this is an Earth-type planet. 20 years ago, the spacecraft Bellerophon landed here with a prospecting party of scientists. Our mission is to search for survivors. That is all. Well, Doc, there it is. The Lord certainly made some beautiful worlds.
Look at it, Cookie. What do you think about that, huh?
Not a one of them new oils. No beer, no women, no pool parlors, nothing. Nothing to do but throw rocks at tin cans. But we gotta bring our own tin cans.
Attention, captain to crew. We are now entering the atmosphere of Altair 4. No survival suits will be required upon landing. Oxygen content 4.7 richer than Earth standard. Gravity only 0.897. Adjust your equipment accordingly, that's all.
All hands, check equipment.
Jerry, can you make out anything down there?
Well, maybe missing some individual structures, but as far as I can see, there are no cities, ports, roads, bridges, dams. There's just no sign of civilization at all.
Sir, we're being radar scanned.
What? Let me see that.
There it is on the electronic equipment.
Yeah, can you zero on it?
No, sir, but it seems to emanate from an area about 20 miles square.
Bosun, pass the alert.
Aye, aye, sir. Combat stations, blast them in. Activate your scopes.
Radio contact, sir. There's a voice here.
Human?
Yes, sir. Sounds like it.
Boost it on the speaker.
Space ship, identify yourself. You are being tracked.
Cut me in, Quinn.
Yes, sir.
United Planets Cruiser C-57D, J.J. Adams commanding. Who are you?
Mobius of the Bellerophon.
Who?
Edward Mobius.
Jerry?
Yep, here it is. His name's on the passenger list. Mobius E, Ph.D., Lit. D., Expedition Philologist.
What do you wish here, Cruiser?
We're your relief, sir. We're very glad to find you alive. Dr. Mobius, are you there?
Naturally, I appreciate your concern. But absolutely no assistance of any kind is required.
Well, the red carpet treatment, huh?
Dr. Mobius, my orders are to survey the situation on Altair 4.
Let me repeat. I'm in no sort of difficulty here. Your best procedure will be to turn back at once, without landing.
Sorry, sir, but those aren't my orders.
Commander, if you sit down on this planet, I warn you that I cannot be answerable for the safety of either your ship or your crew.
Dr. Mobius, I require landing coordinates. I'll be obliged if you'll supply me with them.
Very well. I wash my hands of all responsibility. You have standard charts.
Yes, sir.
You may come in at 83, 17, 4 north, 148, 21 west.
Thank you. Got that, Jerry?
It's right back there in the desert.
Commander, I strongly urge you to reconsider.
Quinn, cut him off.
Please permit me to recommend...
Yeah. There's something funny going on down there, Skipper.
Well, we'll soon know what it is. Okay, Jerry, I'll take her in. Here, sir.
No sign of any living being.
Thank you, Bosun.
Look at the color of that sky.
Most fantastic greenish yellow.
Fantastic, Doc, but I'll still take blue.
Oh, I don't know. The sky, the desert, the mountains. I think a man could get used to this and grow to love it.
You better check your command, Mike, Skipper.
Yeah, good idea. Chief.
Sir.
You're in command now, Quinn, back there in the ship. You keep right at those instruments while we look around.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hey, what's this dust coming?
Dust?
A column of dust sweeping towards us over the desert. Oh, it must be a vehicle of some sort.
It looks like we're being met.
Bosun, alert your men.
Aye, aye, sir.
The speed he's traveling. That driver must be a madman.
What driver?
You're right. There's a mechanical creature in charge of it.
It's coming over to us. Take it steady now.
Welcome to Altair 4, gentlemen.
It talks.
I am to transport you to the residence. If you do not speak English, I am at your disposal with 187 other languages, along with their various dialects and sub-tongues.
No, colloquial English will do fine, thank you. This is no offense, but you are a robot, aren't you?
That is correct, sir. For your convenience, I am monitored to respond to the name Robbie.
Hmm. Well, it's a nice climate you have here, Robbie. High oxygen content.
I rarely use it myself, sir. With my metallic structure, it promotes rust.
Hey, Doc, is it a male or a female?
Cookie, I really couldn't say.
In my case, sir, the question is totally without meaning. Will you get in the vehicle, gentlemen?
Doc, Jerry, come along with me.
Right, right.
Quinn, trace this vehicle. If I blink red back to you,
I'll bring the tractor in a hurry, sir.
Right. Here you are, Skipper. Just room for you.
Passengers will please fasten their seat belts.
Looks after us like a mother. The midst of a desert, if you like. Have you ever seen a more gracious and attractive home? Exotic flowers, shady trees, pools of clear water? And there in the doorway, if I'm not mistaken, our unwilling host.
I am Morbius.
I'm Commander Adams. This is Lieutenant Farman, my executive. Lieutenant Astro, our ship's doctor.
How ironic that a simple scholar with no ambition beyond a modest measure of seclusion should, out of a clear sky, find himself besieged by an army of fellow creatures. All grimly determined to be of some service to him.
I'm sorry, sir, if we're not welcome, but we do have our orders.
Of course. And you must stay for lunch, gentlemen. Do forgive the ill manners of an old recluse, if you can. Well, gentlemen, won't you come in?
Well, whatever that lunch was, it was certainly delicious.
Simply some of Robbie's synthetics.
He's your cook, too, huh?
He even manufactures the raw materials. Now come around here, Robbie. I'll show you how he works. One introduces a sample of human food through this aperture in the upper part of Robbie's body. Down here, there's a small built-in chemical laboratory where he analyzes it. Later, he can produce identical molecules in any shape or quantity.
Oh, a housewife's dream.
Plus absolute selfless obedience. But do not attribute feelings to him, gentlemen. Robbie is simply a tool. Tremendously strong, of course. He could quite easily topple this whole house off its foundation.
In the wrong hands, mightn't such a tool become a deadly weapon?
No, Doctor. Not even if I were the mad scientist of the thrillers. Because, you see, there happens to be a built-in safety factor. Commander, may I borrow that formidable-looking sidearm of yours? Thank you. Now, Robbie, point this thing at that fruit tree out there on the terrace. Fire! and the tree has disintegrated entirely. You understand this mechanism we're in?
Yes, Morbius. A simple blaster.
All right. Now turn around here. Point it at the commander.
What?
Now, wait a minute.
Aim right between the eyes. Fire! You see, he's helpless. His whole electronic being is in a most distressing turmoil. He's locked in a sub-electronic dilemma between my direct orders and his basic inhibitions against harming rational beings. Order canceled. If I were to allow that distress to continue, he would blow every circuit in his body.
Dr. Morbius, how did you come by such a mechanism?
Oh, I didn't come by him, Doctor. I just tinkered him together during my first 2 months here.
What? You mean you made it?
A useful enough toy, Lieutenant. But nowadays, I have no time for such things.
Dr. Morbius, you're a philologist, an expert in words and languages, their origins and meanings. Yet this robot of yours is beyond the combined resources of all Earth's physical science.
My dear Commander, I think you overestimate both Robbie and myself. Gentlemen, let me now show you another bit of parlor magic. If I wave my hand over this beamer...
Hey, we're trapped. Steel shutters over all the doors and windows.
Oh, forgive me, gentlemen, I did not mean to alarm you. I had Robbie install those steel shutters before I realized how altogether safe I am here. I just have to pass my hand over the beamer again, and they return to their original positions out of sight. Oh, that's better. Well, gentlemen, this has been very pleasant. You've seen how very comfortable I am here. No hardships, no special difficulties, and no need at all for military assistance. And I dare say you've become impatient to get back to base.
Yes, sir. The moment we've interviewed the other members of the Bellerophon party.
The others? But there are no others, Commander.
The what?
Before the first year was out, they'd all, every man and woman, succumbed to a... Well, and a sort of planetary force here. Some dark, terrible, incomprehensible force. Only my wife and myself were immune.
And how do you account for your immunity, Dr. Morbius?
Well, my wife and I differed from the others in our special love of this new world. In our boundless longing to make a home here. Far from the scurry and the strife of mankind. I remember how, when the boat was taken to return to Earth, she and I were utterly heartbroken.
Skipper, there's no record of any wife on the list of the Bellerophon passengers.
Lieutenant, look under biochemistry, Julia Marson. She and I were married with a skipper on the voyage out here.
I thought Robbie had made some very charming feminine touches. I take it Mrs. Morbius isn't at home today.
My dear wife died a few months after the others. And in her case, it was of natural causes.
Oh. I'm very sorry. Dr. Morbius, just what were the symptoms of all those other deaths? The unnatural ones, I mean.
The symptoms are very striking, Commander. One by one, in spite of every possible safeguard, my co-workers were torn literally limb from limb.
By what?
By some devilish thing that never once showed itself.
And the Bellerophon?
Vaporized, as the three remaining survivors tried to take her off.
And yet in all these 19 years, you personally have never again been bothered by this planetary force?
Only in nightmares of those times. Yet always in my mind, I seem to feel the creature is lurking somewhere close at hand. Sly and irresistible. Only waiting to be re-invoked for murder.
Father?
Halter! Halter, I specifically asked you not to join us for lunch.
Oh, but Father, lunch is over. I'm sure you never said a word about not coming in for coffee. Well, did you or did you not?
A girl. A brother. Is she terrific?
Take it easy now, Farman.
Gentlemen, this is my daughter, Commander Adams. Dr. Ostro.
How do you do?
Lieutenant Farman.
Oh, how do you do?
How do you do?
Oh, I've always so terribly wanted to meet a young man, and now three of them at once.
That's very kind of you.
Oh, you're lovely, Doctor. Of course, the other two are unbelievable.
Well, that puts me in my place.
Could this one get you some coffee?
Oh, I'm quite able to get it.
Oh, of course you are, but come over here.
Well, Commander, if I can be of any help to you in your preparations for a homeward voyage...
Thank you, sir, but unfortunately, circumstances may keep us here for quite a while.
Oh, circumstances?
My orders don't quite seem to cover the Bellerophon fatalities. I'm forced now to contact base for new instructions.
But, Commander, suppose these new instructions require my return to Earth for questioning. 2 years or more away from my work here? No. You know, tell me just what is in vogue when you're making contact with Earth base.
Well, fundamentally, it's a question of crude power, how to short-circuit the continuum on a 5 or 6 parsec level. Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
No.
To build one, we'd have to make use of about 2/3 of the ship's electronic gear, then unship the main drive to juice it. Just to construct a bunker to house the core would take us about 10 days.
Disabled here for 10 days and 10 nights? Tell me, would 2-inch lead shielding do just as well?
Sure, it'd be fine. If we happen to be carrying about 100 square yards of the stuff.
I'll have Robbie run some off for you. We'll have it not later than noon tomorrow.
Well, it's very obliging of you, sir.
Obliging? Look out there, Commander. The graves of the Bellerophon party. I dug those graves with my own hands. Believe me, I have no wish to repeat that experience.
Put it over there by the core, thank you, Robbie.
Wait a minute. That's solid lead he's carrying.
Common lead would have crushed the vehicle, sir. This is my morning's run of isotope 217. The whole thing hardly comes to 10 tons. Pardon me, sir.
Oh, hello, Alter.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Does your father know you're out here?
He did tell me not to go near the ship, but this isn't very near, is it?
You'd be farther away still if we took a walk.
Well, Robbie might come back.
Oh, he's occupied over there. Cookie's following him around like a shadow. Now, come on, a walk's just what you need on a morning like this. Hey, Robbie.
Can I be of service, sir?
Now, never mind about the sir. Come over here where the skipper can't see us. Look, I'm nothing by a cook, so you don't have to be that polite. But I'm a stranger on this so-called planet, and I was just wondering if you could tell me where I could get hold of some of the real stuff.
Real stuff?
Just for cooking purposes, you understand. I take a big pride in my duties.
Pardon me, sir. Stuff?
Oh, just about one jaw left in this bottle. Now, this is it. Genuine Asian rocket bourbon. Hey, wait a minute. Hey, I didn't say you could drink it. You low-living contraption. I ought to take a can opener to you.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing. Yes. Relatively simple alcoholic molecules with traces of fusel. Would 60 gallons be sufficient?
Gallons? Hey, Robbie, I've been from here to there in this galaxy, and I just want you to know, you're the most understanding soul I ever met up with.
Tomorrow night, sir, it will be ready. Now, if you will pardon me, Miss Alter will be waiting.
Nothing personal, Alter. Just a kiss.
Oh, but, Lieutenant, why should people want to kiss each other?
Oh, well, it's an old custom. All the really high civilizations go in for it.
Oh, but it's so silly.
Well, it's good for you, though. It stimulates the whole system. As a matter of fact, you can't be in tip-top health without it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'd only be too happy to show you.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Lieutenant.
Oh, it's no trouble at all.
Is that all there is to it, this kissing?
Well, you've sort of got to stick with it.
Oh. Oh, could we try just once more? Do you mind?
Oh, not at all.
I don't know, Lieutenant. There must be something seriously the matter with me because, well, honestly, I haven't noticed the least bit of stimulation.
Honey, let's do this thing right. This time, let's really give it the works, huh? All right, honey, now just let yourself go and...
Lieutenant Bob!
Don't say another word, sir. I know there are a lot of pressing duties waiting for me back at the ship.
You're right, Lieutenant.
And rank does have its little privileges, doesn't it, sir?
You can depend on it, Lieutenant, that those privileges won't be stretched into taking your kind of advantages.
What I...
Dismissed!
Yes, sir.
Well, what's the matter? Why did you both act so funny?
Well, don't you understand, Alva? No? Well, look at yourself. You can't run around like that in front of men. It was bad enough anyway, a girl like you, after a year in a spaceship. But when you're wearing nothing but that play suit, particularly in front of a space wolf like Farman, well, for Pete's sake, go home and put on something that's... Well, put on anything.
What's wrong with my clothes? I designed them myself. Oh, don't you like the way I look? Stop looking at me that way.
Elta, get out of here before I have you run out of the area under guard. Then I'll have to put more guards on the guards. Now get out of here, Elta.
Funny feeling, Joe. I stood guard over the spaceship before at night. There never were two moons in the sky.
Yeah.
Joe.
Yeah?
Do you hear something?
Like what?
Like a sort of big breathing.
No.
Well, that's funny. I did.
No one around. You can see that. No sign of anyone or anything.
Funny. Like a sort of big breathing.
All right, both guards claim to have been at their posts and away. Yet the ship was entered. The heavy-duty hatch was raised and the latch back. Equipment was sabotaged. All this without anybody seeing or hearing anything.
Same story from everyone, Skipper.
Quinn, I don't care how you do it, but this gear has got to be patched up. Otherwise, we'll never get the transmitter working to contact Earth base. And we'll never be able to take the ship home again when the time comes.
Yeah. No one actually saw or hurt anyone last night. Strong says...
Yeah, I know. He thinks he heard something like... Like a big breathing.
And so the curtain falls on Act One of tonight's Caltech play, Forbidden Planet. In a moment, we commence Act Two. The Caltech Theatre now presents Lionel Stevens in Forbidden Planet. Act Two.
Like my new dress, Commander?
Well, I...
It's long, you see. Nothing shows through.
Alta, I'm sorry about the way I spoke to you yesterday. I was, well, sort of bothered.
I had this dress made especially for you. Though I didn't really want to see you. You still look at me in that funny way. I suppose there's just something personally about me that... That you don't like.
Alta, you always look quite beautiful.
Well, then why don't you kiss me like everybody else does?
Everybody? Hasn't your father taught you anything at all?
Well, he says I'm terribly ignorant. But I've had poetry and mathematics and logic, physics and geology and
biology? Well, of course, that's mainly on the theoretical side.
Oh, well, so far. But what's wrong with theory?
This is what's wrong with it.
That wasn't at all as I felt after the lieutenant kissed me. I feel different altogether. Oh, a wonderful, wonderful feeling.
Let's go back to the house. I have to see your father. This is the situation, Dr. Morbius. Last night, the ship was entered and our Klystron monitor was sabotaged.
And you suspect me? Then the time has come for clarification. Sit down, gentlemen. In times long past, this planet was the home of a mighty and noble race of beings who call themselves the Krell. Ethically as well as technologically, they are a whole million years ahead of mankind. For in unlocking the mysteries of nature, they conquer even their baser selves. In the course of aeons, they abolish sickness, insanity, crime, and all injustice. But then, seemingly upon the threshold of some supreme accomplishment, which was to have crowned their entire history, this all but divine race perished in a single night.
Perished?
Yes, Doctor. In the 2,000 centuries since that unexplained catastrophe, even their cloud-piercing towers of glass and porcelain and adamantine steel have crumbled back into the soil of Altair IV, and nothing, absolutely nothing, remains above the ground. However, under the ground...
Under the ground, Dr. Morbius?
Behind this room there is a tunnel. Now come with me, and I will show you wonders of which the human mind could never conceive. Well, gentlemen, already you've seen a certain amount. You've seen Krell metal, with molecules so densely interlocked that your blasters make no kind of impact on it. You've seen mile upon mile of self-servicing, self-renewing machinery, still functioning as perfectly as when it was constructed, more than 2,000 centuries ago.
Utterly incredible.
You've seen their laboratories.
What's this, Dr. Morbius?
On this screen may be projected a total scientific knowledge of the Krell, from its primitive beginnings to the day of its annihilation. A sheer bulk, surpassing many million earthly libraries. I turn this knob, and as you see, the panel lights up. Hieroglyphics appear.
You're able to read this?
A little. It's my profession. I started on it some 20 years ago. Eventually, I was able to deduce most of their huge logical alphabet, so I began to learn. And the first practical result was that robot of mine, which you gentlemen appear to find so very remarkable. Child's play. Why, I've come here every day now for 2 decades, painfully picking up a few of the least difficult fragments of their knowledge.
A thing like this, it's too big to evaluate.
Dr. Morbius, what's this device?
Oh, one could describe that as a brain booster. And as a headset, electrodes at each end. You can see it was designed for something far bulkier than my human cranium.
And its function?
I will activate it. Now, watch closely.
Is appearing. It's Alter.
Just a three-dimensional image, Commander.
But it's alive.
Because my daughter is alive in my brain from microsecond to microsecond whilst I manipulate. There. I remove the electrodes from my temples and the image vanishes. It's something of a strain.
Here, let me try. I put the headset on, I pull the switch. Now, is that right?
Stop.
But I want to...
Commander, you'd never survive. Our Bellerophon skipper tried it. It was instantly fatal to him.
Oh, so you're immune to this too, Dr. Morbius.
In my first attempt at creating a brain image here, the shock rendered me unconscious for a whole day and a whole night.
Yet you came back for a second go at it?
It was a matter of science, Doctor. You can imagine my joy when I discovered that the shock had permanently doubled my intellectual capacity. Otherwise, my researches would have come to nothing, poor as they may have been.
So that's how it happened.
I have a great deal more to show you, gentlemen. Can you spare further time away from your ship?
Yes, I believe so. I've left Lieutenant Farnham in charge. I've ordered him to set up a standard perimeter for the full...
All right. All hands stand clear of the magnetic fence area.
Have you tested it yet, Bosun?
Just about to do so, sir.
Toss the branch at it.
There go the sparks, sir.
Fine. That'll keep any unwanted visitor from entering the camp. See the full-scale alerts maintained, Bosun.
Aye, aye, sir. A lieutenant.
Huh? Oh, what's your trouble, Cookie?
Well, I haven't completed my washing up duties after chow. I request the lieutenant's permission to take a little walk outside the perimeter, sir.
But there's nothing out there.
Oh, sir, I thought it might brighten up the boys' mess a little bit if I could, find a few wild radishes or something.
Look, Cookie, I don't know what you're lying about, but, you better get back here before the skipper checks in, or we'll both get skinned.
Yes, sir.
Quinn, this is Farman. Kill the power on the fence. All right, Cookie, off you go.
Yes, sir. I thank you, sir.
All right, Quinn. Put it back on.
Bobby, I ain't never gonna forget this. Bottles, stacks of them.
480 pints, sir, as you requested. Total 60 gallons.
Oh, I gotta try it. Wait a minute, Bobby. Genuine Kansas City bourbon. Smooth, too. Like I said, Robbie, anything I can do. Anytime you're hard up for a couple of gallons of lube oil, you just let me know, huh? Hey, what's up? You see something? Somebody coming this way?
No, sir. Nothing coming this way.
Hey, Lieutenant! Lieutenant, the fence is showing! Lieutenant!
Sure. But there's no one coming through.
Shall I have the current shut down, sir?
No. No, it stopped now. Strange, that. Just shorting out.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, check out with the whole system first thing in the morning, boss.
Aye, sir.
Hey, bosun. That fence, the way it was shorting.
Yes, sir.
Commander, you're too arbitrary. Perhaps I do not choose to be dictated to in my own world.
But Dr. Morbius, a scientific find of this magnitude has got to be taken under the United Planets supervision. No one man can be allowed to monopolize it.
In the past 2 hours, I've been expecting you to make exactly such an asinine statement.
Asinine?
Just one moment, Commander. For close on 20 years now, I've been constantly, and I hope dispassionately, considering this very problem. Now I've come to the unalterable conclusion that man is unfit as yet to receive such knowledge, such almost limitless power.
Whereas Morbius, with his artificially expanded intellect, is now ideally suited to administer this power for the whole human race.
Precisely, Doctor. Such portions of the Krell science as I may from time to time deem suitable and safe, I shall dispense to Earth. Other portions I shall withhold. In this, I shall be answerable exclusively to my own conscience and judgment.
Dr. Morbius, in the absence of special instructions, you leave me in a very awkward position. I wanted to contact you from the ship. Adam speaking.
Commander, this is Farman.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Skipper, the chief's been murdered.
Quinn murdered? What?
He was alone on the ship working on the monitor. The rest of us were all outside on guard duty.
But how was it done?
Done? Skipper, his body's plastered all over the communications room.
Right. Leave everything as it is. We're on our way. Come on, Doc.
It started again.
Doc, that's the foot of whatever it was that killed Quinn last night.
I made this plaster model from the footprints we found.
37 inches by 19. And the terrifying thing, Skipper, this thing runs counter to every known law of evolution. It just doesn't fit into normal nature. Anywhere in this galaxy, it's a nightmare.
Commander, are you ready to hold discipline on the cook?
Yes, what's happening?
Come on, Cookie.
Yes, sir.
I'm obliged to remind you, sir, that I gave him permission to go out last night.
Did you give him permission to get falling down drunk, Lieutenant?
Drunk, sir? Me, sir? Well, anyway, why did that robot argue me in a drink and all that whiskey in the first place?
You were with the robot last night?
Oh, yes, sir. Him and me, we kind of got to toasting each other's good health. Just for your cordial interplanetary relations, you understand?
And that went on all the time, even while the chief was being killed?
Well, certainly, sir. But you don't think I could have got that stiff in 5 minutes?
All right, dismissed.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, come on, Cookie.
Well, Doc, it just about washes the robot up as a suspect.
And what does that leave us with?
Maybe it leaves us with the same one we've always had.
Morbius.
But we were with him. Maybe you and I ought to drop over to the Krell laboratory and get our brains boosted. Then maybe we could understand.
Sir?
Yes, Lieutenant?
Dr. Morbius is here.
Oh. Well, ask Dr. Morbius to come in.
Yes, sir.
Skipper, what do you suppose he's...
Oh, good day, Dr. Morbius.
Well, Commander, I dare say neither of us really slept last night.
That's a pretty close guess.
I warned you while your ship was still in space. I bade you not to land on the planet. Believe me, Commander, that's only a foretaste. The Bellerophon pattern is being woven all over again.
What?
Remain here, and the next attack upon your party will be more general and more deadly.
Dr. Morbius, how do you know that?
No? Well, I seem to visualize it. If you wish, call it a premonition. That is all I have to say, Commander.
Well, Skipper, what do you make of that?
I'd say it sounded like an ultimatum. We'll be ready. Tonight we'll be prepared for an attack. Bosun, I want a clear field of fire in all directions.
You've got it, sir.
Fine, fine. Lieutenant.
Sir.
Have you got your trouble squad in hand?
Yes, sir, they're in hand. But they're a little trigger happy. They're sort of edgy to see whatever's out there tonight.
Jerry, look, this might be a big deal coming up.
Could be the biggest, Skip.
Well, I want you to know that I'm sorry if I kind of leaned on you. You've got to understand that.
Stop knocking yourself out, Skip. She picked the right man.
Huh? Oh.
Skipper, radar just picked up something.
Where away?
At the head of the gully, heading this way.
Automatic control. Batteries. Fire. Hold fire.
Dead on target, Skipper, but it's still coming.
I'll stop it.
Get back, Lieutenant. Batteries, fire. Ceasefire!
Skipper, it's still coming.
Well, whatever it was, our main battery finally stopped it.
You believe that, Skipper?
No. No, it just went away for some reason. It'll be back. Doc, an invisible being that can't be disintegrated by atomic fission.
No, Skipper, that's a scientific impossibility.
Hypnotic illusions don't tear people apart, and that's what this thing did to our men tonight. Doc, you saw its shape yourself standing right there in those neutron beams.
It must have been made of solid nuclear material, renewing its molecular structure from one microsecond to the next.
Bosun, I want the tractor.
Ready, sir.
So now we just pick up the girl and her father, whether they like it or not, do we?
Section 86A, evacuate all civilians from disaster area.
Yeah? You left out two very important words. Where feasible. Now, if you remember the Bellerophon expedition, their ship was vaporized trying to lift off.
Which makes it a gilt-edged priority that one of us gets into that Krell lab and takes that brain boost. Well, I don't know of any other way we can hope to combat this thing.
You remember what happened when the Bellerophon's commander took that brain boost?
Yes, I remember that, too. Doc, in case we make it into the lab, I'll take first go at the booster. You hear me, Doc?
I hear you, Skip.
Bosun?
Aye, sir.
Leaving you in command while we visit Dr. Morbius. Get the ship operational. Do your best to wait it out for me and the doctor, but the second that fence starts to short again, you lift off.
Right, Skipper.
Let's go, Doc.
Oh, I'm so glad to see you. So glad. I've had the most awful dream that you...
I'm all right, Alter.
Why are you here? Tell me what's happened.
We were attacked. Three men died, including Jerry Farman.
Oh. Oh, darling.
That's why I came here. Before anything else happens, I have to see to your safety.
How were you attacked? By what?
I don't know. It's nothing human, just some kind of big outline under the disintegrator beams. Alter, you can't explain it.
No.
Anyway, we fought it, and we lost, and I believe it'll come back.
Well, then you must leave now.
Darling, I'm not going without you.
I can't possibly leave Father alone. I just can't.
Then we'll take him with us.
By force? I can't agree to that either.
Also, you don't realize what's loose on this planet.
But I'm immune, like both my parents.
That's what your father says, but I don't believe it.
Nothing could be immune to that thing up there.
Oh, darling, darling, please go. Please, if you love me, go.
Darling, listen to me.
Oh, go, darling.
Doc, can you talk some sense into this? Hey, Doc. Well, where is he? The doc was right here.
Here is the doctor, sir.
Doc? Oh,
lay him on the sofa, Robbie.
Door's open into the tunnel.
That's where Robbie brought him from.
Doc, you took the brain boost? You ought to see my new mind. Up there in lights, on the indicator. Bigger than Morbius. Now,
easy, Doc, easy. Easy.
Listen, Morbius was too close to the problem. The Krell... The Krell had completed their final project. True creation. Creation of life.
Well, come on, Doc, let's have it.
But... The Krell forgot one thing.
Yes, what?
Monsters. Monsters from the id.
The id? What's that? Well, talk, Doc. Doc.
Oh. Oh, darling.
How romantic.
Oh, Father.
A fool and middling idiot. As though his ape's brain could contain the secrets of the Krell.
Father. He's dead.
He was warned, and now he's paid. Let him be buried along with the other victims of greed and folly.
Morbius, you've chosen for me. John, I'm ready to go with you.
Hold her. No. Commander, she mustn't do this. She must be prevented.
Morbius, what is the id?
Young man, my daughter is planning a very foolish action. She will be terribly punished.
What is the id?
Id. It's an obsolete term once used to describe the elementary basis of the subconscious mind.
Monsters from the id, the subconscious mind.
What?
Monsters from the subconscious. That's what the doc meant. Morbius, those machines in there, 8,000 cubic miles of Klystron relays, enough power for a whole population of creative geniuses, operated by remote control, operated by the electromagnetic impulses of individual Krell brains.
And for what purpose?
In return, that machine would instantaneously project solid matter to any point on the planet, in any shape or color they might imagine. For any purpose, Morbius. Creation by mere thought.
Why haven't I seen this all along?
But like you, the Krell forgot one deadly danger. Their own subconscious hate and lust for destruction.
The beast. The mindless primitive. Even the Krell must have evolved from that beginning.
So those mindless beasts of the subconscious had access to a machine that could never be shut down. The secret devil of every soul on the planet, all set free at once to loot and maim and take revenge, Morbius, and kill.
My poor Krell. After a million years of shining sanity, they could hardly have understood what power was destroying them. But there's one obvious fallacy. The last Krell died some 2,000 centuries ago. But today, as we all know, there's still at large upon this planet a living monster. A monster created by the subconscious mind of someone.
Your mind refuses to face the conclusion.
Morbius.
What?
Something approaching from the southwest, breaking down trees in its path. Quite close.
Father!
The monster. That thing out there, well, it's you. It was your subconscious that created it.
You're insane! You must be. How else would you have led it here, where Alta must see it torn to pieces?
You still think she's immune? She's joined herself to me, body and soul.
Yes, and whatever comes, forever.
Say it's a lie. Shout! Let it hear you out there. Say you don't love this man.
Not even if I could.
Stop it, Robbie. Don't let it in. Kill it, Robbie.
He can do nothing, Morbius. He knows it's your other self.
Heavens, I'm not a monster.
We're all part monsters in our subconscious. That's why we have laws and religion.
Into the tunnel, quickly.
Morbius, you listen to me. We don't have much time. Your mind was artificially enlarged. Consciously, it still lacked the power to operate the great machines. But your subconscious had been made strong enough.
I won't hear you.
20 years ago, when your comrades voted to return to Earth, you sent your secret id out to murder them.
Not quite realizing it, of course, except maybe in your dreams.
What man can remember his own dreams?
Well, at least when our ship was approaching from space, you remembered enough to warn us off. But then, when you thought you were threatening your little egomaniac empire, your subconscious sent its id monster out again. More deaths, Morbius. More murder. Even in you, the loving father that still exists, this mindless primitive. More enraged and more inflamed with each new frustration. So now you're whistling up your monster again to punish her for her disloyalty and disobedience. And if you don't do something about it soon, Morbius, it's going to be coming right through that door.
Shut in, Phil Middle? Impossible.
The machines are going to supply your monster with whatever amount of power requires to reach us.
How does he? You don't believe this of me? Tell me you don't. Then it must be true. I must be guilty. My evil self is at that door. And I have no power to stop it.
Father, you can help us. I've known you. Brave and noble like the Krell?
Yes. Yes, I can help you. I can.
You! Out there! No further! I deny you! I give you up! I deny you!
Finished. All finished.
Father.
Strain, it's been too much.
Commander, throw that switch.
This?
Yes, throw it. In 24 hours, you and Alter must be 100 million miles away out in space. The Krell furnaces. A chain reaction has begun. Can't be reversed. Go. Go quickly.
.6 miles. We're clear now, Alta.
That's Altair 4 on the viewplate.
Yes, the bright speck below the star. In 15 seconds, it'll all be over. Altair 4 would be destroyed. Your father, my shipmates, all the stored knowledge of the Krell. 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. There. The explosion.
Oh, Father.
Altair. About 1 million years from now, the human race will have crawled up to where the Krell stood in their great moment of triumph and tragedy. Your father's name will shine again like a beacon in the galaxy. It'll remind us that we are, after all, not God.
Well, that was Forbidden Planet, as produced by the Caltrex Theater. Now, in case you're wondering, Caltrex Oil is the name of the largest oil production company in Australia, Malaysia, most of the Far East, and is also known in the United States as the Chevron Oil Company. Well, that's about it for today. I'm just going to say goodbye and go out into the night. I hope to see you here next week. I'll be here. This is Gary Clinton. Good night.
Thank you.